Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. We hope you had a happy Christmas, and we brought you this special edition of the podcast between Christmas and New Year, looking back on what has been an incredible year for NFL fans in the UK. Joined again by Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, we had three games. Pretty special times for British NFL fans.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, it just gets better every year. You're seeing some of the greatest players that play the game, you know, come over here and, you know, have a chance to see a guy like Megatron, have a chance to see some of the players that the fans here, you know, you really think about it and you go, I'm a kid in Pocatello, or I'm a kid in, you know, Albuquerque or some of the cities in the United States, and I may never see one of those players play.
Yeah.
And here you are, a kid in London, and you're going to get a chance to see the best of the best. I think that's fantastic.
If you'd have told the 13-year-old Neil Reynolds, who was sitting in his bedroom surrounded by Dan Marino posters on the wall, that at the end of September I'd be on a rooftop terrace overlooking London, having a glass of wine, chatting football with Dan Marino, who was incredible. Just incredible experiences.
You know what? And let's talk about that, because dreams do come true. Mm. And you know what? We were both around when this idea was first hatched.
Yep.
When Alistair Kirkwood said, we're going to bring an NFL game to London. Oh, you mean preseason game, Alistair? No, we're going to bring a regular season game. Let me just say this.
Everyone looked at him.
I didn't laugh at him because I was sitting across the table from him. But I'm sure when that idea got floated over to New York.
And to the owners.
And to the owners. There were a lot of people going, what? What has that guy been drinking? Mm. But he had a vision, and he had the courage. More important than the vision, he had the courage to chase that vision and put himself out there. Mm. Because had the first one failed, who knows if there'd even be an office in this country right now.
Yeah.
But because of work of guys like Alistair and everybody at NFL UK, the game was a success. It caught the eyes of the fans. It caught at a time when NFL was just really taking off in this country. And then you mix in the broadcasting that Sky's done and you've done, bringing the game to the public. Fans can't help but fall in love with the game. They just need to see it. And now, three games, season tickets, sellouts after sellouts, and who knows what the next thing is in store
for. And to me, that never gets old, seeing Wembley Stadium completely packed to the rafters, because there will be people that have followed the NFL over the last 7 years, and that's what they've become used to. They see a sellout at Wembley Stadium every year. There are people that work at NFL UK that have worked in the league for the last couple of years, or joining as the sport grows, more and more people join. That's the norm. But I've been at Crystal Palace watching Monarchs games with 2,000 people, you know, right down to the bare bones of your real hardcore fan base. And so it never gets old for me to see those sold-out stadiums. No, it's fantastic.
Exactly. I remember going 1994, and we're in White Hart Lane, and there's, you know, 3,000 people watching this play. But you know what? All the time I've been in this business, all the time I've been in pro football, and all the crazy, wonderful experiences I've had, NFL, sold-out NFL games, Sugar Bowl in front of 65,000, national television, yada, yada, yada. The one that I want to be a part of more than any other is an opportunity to be at a Wembley game, because I watch the week build up. I see what you do on Regent Street.
Yeah.
I see the games. I see the fanfare, the fireworks, the passion that the fans have. And I just go, man, I want to be a part of that. Just one time I want to see what it feels like to see that stadium full.
You do feel special. You feel like it's a special week. And this is the thing that I take away from I really enjoy the game days and being on the sidelines and reporting from there. But you just see how much every fan that goes to Wembley Stadium tries to soak out of the day. Well, they soak up quite a lot more than just the day. To be fair, we did Atlanta and Detroit game, and it was a 1 o'clock kickoff. And started the tailgate outside, and it was like 9 o'clock, and they were all on the beer, and you couldn't tell if they'd just got up or if they're just getting in. But the fans absolutely love it, and they're a credit to the sport.
Well, you know what? It's been interesting. As soon as the season ticket sales began, you know, back in December, all of a sudden you're getting tweets about, you know, fans that are so proud that they've got their season ticket. Mm. And, I'm now a two-time season ticket holder, and, you know, they're picking their own seat. All of it's becoming their game. They're taking ownership. Mm. Even though they don't have a team yet, they're taking ownership of the games, and I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, we had three games, of course, 2014. Many of our listeners were probably at all three of them, Miami and Oakland, Atlanta and Detroit, and Jacksonville and Dallas. And ahead of the Jacksonville and Dallas game, we had a fan event out at Wembley Stadium. And let's play you a little piece of the interview that I did with Gus Bradley, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars now. We talked about preparing a team for a big game. Let's hear from Gus.
Well, it will. They'll get some time off this afternoon, and then tonight we have a final team meeting. Short meetings, offense, defense, special teams, followed by a final meeting with me and the rest of the coaches as a team meeting. But it's really only about 10 minutes. By this point in time, they should be ready to go.
Sunday, when we're all enjoying ourselves out here at the tailgate party, you're inside that stadium getting ready. In the locker room, is it your final message to the team? Is it X's and O's, reminders of let's do this on this down, let's do that? Or is it a fire and brimstone speech to get them fired up?
It really, Sunday, by that date, that's their day. You know, we've done our coaching Monday through Saturday, and we turn it over to them, and they go out and play. So a lot of coaching, things like that taking place on the day of game, that's their day. They want their minds to be free from any coaching. Obviously, adjustments have to take place, but for the most part, that's their day.
We've all seen the NFL films footage. If we've been on the sidelines of an NFL game, they don't really need firing up, do they, these guys?
No, I know. We've got tremendous. You know, we talk about a young team, but they have tremendous energy. Yeah. Tremendous energy. And you're going to feel it tomorrow now. They'll go out there. They'll play hard, fast, together for the whole game. And we just feel like we have a chance to be our best, and we trust the results will come.
What are those last 2 minutes like as the doors to the locker room fly open and they come out? Do you just stay out of their way?
You do. That's exactly right. Sunday's their day.
After the game must be either incredible highs or incredible lows. I mean, I know you try and say treat every win and loss the same, but you must have a raw feeling after.
Well, it is. You know what? Because there's victories that take place in every game. There's personal matchups. There's different situations we're looking to attack. Obviously, we tell the truth what happened, but we're not going to miss any of the victories that happen along the way.
So, Jeff, I'll just tell you, actually, just before we started that interview on stage there, Gus Bradley, we'd had the entire Jags team up on stage. Then we said goodbye to the team. It took a little while for them to file out, and we were stood there, and Gus kind of whispered to me as we were looking at his players. He said, you know what, those guys haven't quit on me all year. And it's a young team, but he loved the attitude of that team, and they're not there in Jacksonville. We know that. We can't sugarcoat that. They're a long way from being there, but they have bought into their coach's message.
Yeah, and I think one of the most critical things you have to do, first of all, obviously, you got to have players, and that takes time. That, you know, you look how they've improved themselves in free agency and the draft over the time he's been there. But maybe the next most important thing is you have to capture a culture of winning. That's hard to do, extremely hard to do, when your focus is on the results on the scoreboard. So what I think Gus has done a masterful job with is not focus on the results on the scoreboard right now, but focus on how you compete every day, how you prepare to win, how you care about your teammates, how to be a good teammate, what it means to be a Jaguar. So all of those things will come back to him when the results on the scoreboard start to change because you've got better players.
I look at the Jags, and I do like what I see from Blake Bortles. I think that's your future quarterback. I think that area is settled. He's going to have ups and downs, but I think that's absolutely fine. I think that some skill position players stepped up and made strides this year. Defensively, you could see Gus's impact there, but I'm not a general manager in the NFL, but is it very simple? They upgrade that offensive line dramatically this offseason.
Well, I think, Neil, you have to understand the nature of football, and certainly you do because you've been involved in it at a very high level and very closely as you watch these teams. The good teams typically have one characteristic that's shared you know, amongst them, and that is they're good up front.
Yep.
They're big people. They have good big people. Now, right now, particularly on the offensive side of the football, Jacksonville doesn't have enough good big people. Last year in the offseason, they addressed the defensive line. They got Red Bryant. They brought some guys in that gave them a presence, a physical presence on the defensive line. Now they need that offensively. The problem that you face in that regard is there's 32 other teams that are looking for the same guy. And there aren't enough good offensive linemen. So it's going to take them a little bit of time. But I truly believe that that organization, as you watch it work, they know what they want and they're committed to that vision and will continue to work to get that done.
Do you think that, because Gus Bradley looks like a player's coach, looks like that kind of coach, does that help when it comes to free agency for the Jags? Because it, it's not necessarily going to be a big sell otherwise, are they?
Well, yeah, because, again, you got to look at what attracts a player in free agency. Well, number one, it's the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can compete with anybody because of the way the cap system works in the National Football League. It's not like you're in the Premiership League and you're Swansea, and if Man City wants a guy and you want a guy, well, it ain't going to be a difference because they're just going to go out and buy him. Well, in the National Football League, everybody has basically the same amount of finances to work with. So that's one thing you can compete. Then you got to look at your facility and your city. Well, Jacksonville's not a big city. It's an attractive market to a kid that wants to be in the warmth, yes. Are your facilities what some of the other facilities are in the National Football League right now? Probably not. But, again, you can get past all that. The next thing he looks at is his working environment. What kind of guy am I going to go to work with every day or who work for every day? So what's happening in free agency in the NFL now, it's almost like recruiting in college football. You bring them in on visits.
Take them around.
You take them around. But also, more important than maybe that visit is the reputation that the coaching staff has throughout the league, because there's only 3,500 guys that do this job. And it's a very tight-knit group, and they speak very closely to one another about. So if you're a guy that's hard on players or has no ear for players or doesn't care about his players, and there are some of those guys out there, it's tougher for you to get free agents unless you just flat buy them than it is when you go into a situation like Gus has where the players know that you care about them. Coach Vermeil used to say it perfectly. The players don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah. It's interesting you say about the facilities, because they weren't there in Jacksonville, and they are making strides to fix that. I think Shad Khan has realised that that's a key part of bringing people in. I've been last few off-seasons out to Jacksonville a couple of times each year, and every time I've been out there, one time I went out and they were building a new weight room. The next time I went out, they were doing out the locker rooms. And the last time, it was like they were doing the meeting rooms. I mean, they are wiping everything clean because they feel it's a part of it.
Well, you have to, because I tell you what, last spring I went down to spend some days with the Giants, and I spent some days with my friends at the Jets. And you walk into the Giants facility and it's like you're walking into a museum of Giant football. I mean, it is phenomenal facility. Then you go over to what Woody Johnson has done for the Jets about 15 miles, you know, up the road in Jersey, and you know, you think to yourself, these guys are spoiled.
They got a nice indoor facility there.
It can't
there
be
as well,
anything
they, yeah.
better here, can it? And, you know, as you go around the league, you know, that's the arms race, the facilities arms race that goes on in the National Football League.
Maybe that's why the Saints didn't do very well this year. Remember they went to training camp. Was it in Carolina? Where were they?
They were in West Virginia.
That's it. And it was a really nice place, wasn't it?
Yeah, at a resort in West Virginia.
Softened them up, Jeff.
In the old days, they used to go to Nicholls State University. And my friend told me it was so hot at training camp. Daryl Sims told me this when he was coaching at New Orleans. He is so hot at training camp, he swore in the afternoon practice at period 15, the devil ran across the practice field.
I went to Jackson, Mississippi and watched the Saints practice as well. That was that sort of heat that just melts you. There was no one on the street during the day. It was incredible.
And now, even dogs and cats don't go out on the street.
No, either. They don't. And I actually missed a couple of practices because they got moved to 9 o'clock at night and we were flying in that night. It was just incredible. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on Gus Bradley and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Going to be another busy off-season for them. Around the same time at that event, I was wonderfully treated to 1 hour on stage with Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin. Let's just have a listen to some of the best parts of that.
I love this guy, man. Emmitt is the greatest. And I remember when he first came in the league as just a young guy, he played at Florida. Of course, I played at Miami, and we were rivals. And then when we first got together, it was like just the greatest thing in the world.
You should have saw us last night on the boat. We was having such a great time last night with the Jacksonville fans and some Cowboy fans as well. But it was like a blast. Darren Woodson, all of us hanging out. It's as if we never left the locker room.
Right.
Fred Taylor and everybody. We're planning on doing it again tonight.
Michael, what was it like when this guy did join the team? And maybe tell us about the first few years in Dallas, because much like Jacksonville going through it now, you guys had to start from scratch, and there were some tough early years.
Yeah, you know, Emmett, I remember when we first drafted Emmett, and all summer long they were talking about, we need speed. We need more speed on the team. And then we drafted him, and I said, I thought they said we needed speed. Emmett wasn't the fastest dude. He's not the fastest, because I would watch Emmett play teams like Alabama, and it looked like he wasn't running anywhere, but at the end of the game, he'll have like 200 yards. I say, where did he get 200 yards from? You know? And then he came to Dallas, man. And when Emmett got there, everything just changed. We were looking for that running game. He jumped right in, and from day one, he became basically the best running back in the league.
I think every year around the draft, we get excited and we dissect these players coming out of college, and rightly so, we get excited because the draft is a great off-season event. But I guess we have to be careful how much we read into that, because they said you were too small, you were too slow, and 18,000 yards later, you can shut them all up.
Well, you know, they were right. I was too small and I was too slow. I wasn't the fastest guy.
So what was the difference then? What made it?
You know, I had great teammates. I had great heart and great love for the game. I studied the game. Michael taught me how to train and prepare my body for a tough season. And so, you know, I was a very competitive running back. And so I wanted to be successful. I wanted to be that guy for the Cowboys. And I wanted to help our team win Super Bowls and championships. So that is just the bottom line.
And let me tell you something, man, why I love this game so much. And honestly, why this is a game that the world should have. You know, Emmett and I were roommates when he first got in the league. You know, Emmett came in the league as a young guy, and I remember our first couple of days staying together, and he was like, you know, man, I said, what do you want to do, man? He said, hey, I want to become an all-time leader rusher. And grab my sheets.
And Mike
said, man, go to sleep. You're crazy.
He laughed in my face.
I said, man, go to sleep. You're crazy. Get out of here. You're just the slowest rookie in the world. What do you mean you're going to be the all-time leader rusher? You know? So I pulled my seat over. And lo and behold, man, through hard work, through determination, through not quitting, through overcoming all the obstacles, no matter what someone said, he became that. And those are the stories that need to be told for all the young fans to get inspired to do whatever they have in their heart to do.
Hey, we were actually in L.A. It was your first game back, because you had just got back from knee surgeries and so forth. So it was your first game back, and we out here playing the Rams, and that's when he asked me that question. He laughed in my face. I could not. I was like, wow.
It was funny. You know, he may have gotten the last laugh. But at the time, I was like, boy, this rookie is tripping right here. It was all good.
I used to jump around after games and be all spry and bouncing around, all energetic on Mondays and so forth. And Mike used to come to him and say, son, wait till game 15. We're going to see if you still have that kind of energy after the game. And by game 15, I was walking. I was jumping around. I was like, man, this football thing is kind of different up here with all these grown men.
It was a long season, right?
Long season.
What about the guy next to you? Because we look now around the NFL, Emmett, and it's receivers that are 6'4", 210 pounds. But this guy was a big physical receiver in his day as well.
Right. Well, Michael was one of the hardest workers I've ever been around.
Right.
And what most people don't realize is that this guy here, if we had to run 15 or 17 110s or 330s, whatever it was, Michael would come back after hours when no one was looking. So I was catching him in the West, and I'd pull up to the complex and see his car. Michael would be out there running extra 110s, 330s with a weighted vest on and also weighted ankles around his weights around his ankles. So he would work extra hard. He taught me. When I say he literally taught me how to train, I learned how to become a better professional for what I had to go through by watching this guy here train, and I learned under him. And so, but also, one of the most passionate football players I've ever been around.
Yeah.
He brought so much passion to the game. where all the players around him fed off of that passion. And that competitive spirit that he brought, it was just there. And so being from Florida, Florida kids are a little crazy. We are very passionate about our football. And we love our football like you won't believe. They talk about Texas all they want. But Florida has something in its blood right. also. And don't forget that. Don't ever forget that, because us Florida kids, we are very, very competitive. And nine times out of ten, it was the only thing we had to do anyway was go out and play football.
Right. And you were one of 17 children, so you had to be heard, right?
Right. There's a lot of family members in my house. And
17.
Yeah, 17 of us. And I wanted to make sure that there was a little Michael that always stayed inside the big Michael, that every time the big Michael said, "Man, I'm tired, that's enough work," the little Michael says, "Let's go put in some more work to make sure we don't go back to the ghetto." So we went back to get some work.
Which Michael came out the most? The little Michael.
Did you hear what Emmitt said when he said about the intensity of that I played with? That's why I love the X-Man, because he plays with that same kind of intensity. The 88 now plays with that intensity, and it is infectious.
I think it's something with the 88 number.
It is. Even now get this too now. Even that 88 for the Jaguars is a bad man.
Alan Hearns
a bad man too, because he's from the U.
Fellas, I guess you've just both alluded to it a little bit there. Is you were a team of characters, you were a team of talented players, but there was a work ethic that... Would you have had those successes without that work ethic?
I think what Jimmy Johnson established was, I mean, Jerry and Jimmy, they definitely needed to change the direction of the entire organization. And Jimmy brought that winning attitude, that winning spirit, that culture that was definitely needed for that change. And so he established that culture very early by trading Herschel Walker away for 13
picks.
Great
move, yeah.
And then not only that, but having a revolving door. From 89 to 90, having a revolving door, bringing in players that had the same mindset of a guy like Michael or Troy or many others. He wanted players on that team that would not quit when it got real tough. And so he established that culture very early, and we just adopted it and just carried it as far as we could.
All right, let's go in a different direction then. How about some of you guys ask some questions? All right, we're going to try and get these. All right, we'll go over this side for a second. Lady there in the bobble hat, yeah, we're going to get to you with a microphone right there. There's your chance to ask a question.
This is for Emmett. Emmett, could you teach me to dance, please? Or could I have just one little dance today?
That, actually,
I was born in Dallas, and I waited 53 years to meet any cowboy. And finally, I'm doing it.
So I had the question down on my list here, both in Dancing with the Stars. Who was the best?
Emmett.
Emmett.
Hey, Bruno said to me on Dancing with the Stars.
What did he say?
I shall never forget this. I've been scarred the rest of my life. Bruno said to me, Michael, you're like the economy. We keep waiting on you to get better and nothing happens.
That deep down,
I said, Bruno, let me see you run a slant. Let me see you go run a slant route. That's what I want to see.
Emmett, did you enjoy that? Dancing with the Stars?
I had
enjoyed that story more.
That was hilarious when Michael told me that Bruno said that about him. I mean, I truly did enjoy Dancing with the Stars. It was one of those things where Michael told me before, he said, when you go on the show, man, just have fun.
It was supposed to be a trick for these people. Emmett came to me in church and said, we were in church, praising the Lord. Emmett said, I got to talk to you after church. I said, praising the Lord. After church, we go to dinner with Bishop, right? Bishop Jakes. Emmett asked me a couple. He said, man, you know, they got this new show out called Dancing with the Stars. I said, really? He said, what is it? He says, you know, you're going to do some, what kind of dancing? He said, ballroom dancing. He said, you think I should do it? I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm thinking all of the fellas are going to get together, and we're going to laugh our butts off on Monday night while Emmett out there dancing.
And you know what? No one said anything. None of my teammates said nothing once I made the announcement I was going on the show. I think they all were sitting back reserving their comments for me to fall flat on my face. And so when it never happened, yeah, hey, man, when can we come out and watch you dance?
Oh, I want to come and see you. All right. Let's take another question. You got one over this side? Let's have the gentleman here in the yellow. If we can go here with the gentleman holding up the yellow thing, and then I've got one at the back next, yeah?
Oh, it's hilarious.
This is for both of you. What was the sweetest Super Bowl win?
Sweetest Super Bowl
win. For me, I don't care what anyone says, and they're all great, and everybody will say that, and they are. But there's nothing like that first one.
Nothing.
There's nothing like that first one, man.
I mean, you can never replace all of the emotions, all of the anxieties, all the things that normally goes into building up to that very first one. So, I mean, I tried to replace it in the second one. Didn't happen. The third one didn't happen. And I don't think I could ever replace how I felt going into that stadium, riding into it. Remember that? We came out of the locker room. And Michael and I walked out together. We normally do our little normal routine. We stepped out there, man. My heart was racing and my feet was shaking and everything. Mike said, "You feel that?" I said, "Feel what?" He said, "There's an earthquake." Well, no, those are just my legs. Those are my legs.
Buckle. I said to E, I said, "Man, Ace." He looked at me. I said, "Don't say a word, because if they know we scared, we don't got a shot. We don't have a shot, though." I said, "Don't say a word." Because, you know, right before every game, Emmett and I would always walk out. It means double trouble. He's going to go by land and I will go by air, but they will die, right? and our knees buckled, man. We were so scared, man. I was like, wow, there's nothing like it. And you guys got to understand, we had come from 1-15 seasons and 3-13 seasons. So really, to see that moment after that first Super Bowl, when we were in that locker room, all of the hard work, all of the blood, the sweat, the crying, had come to a great end. That was the most incredible feeling that one man can share,
yes, sir,
that any man can share.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get some questions. JP Shadrick, we'll throw it over to you for a couple of questions from the back of the crowd.
I love that accent.
Neil, thanks a lot. Rob and Dave grew up in Dallas, but they live here in the UK. Whereabouts now?
We live in Hertfordshire now.
I don't know where that is, but he's in Hertfordshire. What's north? What's the question?
Do you guys have a particular play or memory from your careers that you just look back on and say, like, how did I do that? You know, that was incredible.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you what. I've been talking about this with some of the other guys because Tony Romo's hurt and people are saying that, why are they forcing Tony Romo to play? And so Emmett and I remember one game, a Washington game, and I had punctured ribs or something and they were hurting. And he said, "Emmett, could you breathe?" I said, "Yeah, I can breathe." He said, "Well, they don't know you hurt, just stand out there, and I'll run the ball," right? So I'm like, "I can barely breathe, just stand out there." So I'm Emmett's killing him. So we get in the game against New York, and Emmett goes down, hurt his shoulder. And I said, "Man, you okay, man?" He said, "My shoulder, man, I don't know." I said, "Hey, they don't know you hurt, just stand back there." I said, "Just stand back there, and I can catch some passes." But, of course, we started handing the ball off to Emmett, and he was running. And he had one of his greatest games ever. And I remember going in the locker room, going back in the locker room, and he was in pain. Yes. And it does deserve a hand because there was such an incredible game. I remember the moment going in the locker room, and he was in pain, and just embracing him and grabbing him and saying, "Hey, man, thank you for doing that for us, because we won the division, we got the bye, we went on to win a Super Bowl after all of that." And that was one of my most incredible moments.
I just want to give you a couple of numbers on that, because I did write about this I wrote a book on the toughest players in NFL history, and there was a chapter on this very game. And you had 42 touches on the game. 17 of them came after he separated his shoulder. He's got a thigh pad taped to his shoulder. And there's a couple of fantastic quotes. So I had a quote from backup running back Lincoln Coleman, who says, Jimmy told me to go in and Emmett told me to get out. That was the first one. And then the second one came from Emmett. He said, "The offensive line kept asking me if I was okay. I said, I'm absolutely fine. I lied." I mean, what an incredible game that was, though, and it got you home field advantage.
Yeah.
But does that one stick in the mind for you?
That is one of the best performances I've ever had. That's one of those performances where you actually have to give up yourself for the sake of the team. And I knew what was at stake.
Yeah.
And so Michael's right. That's how we challenge one another. I mean, he had to stand out there with the little cartilage tear in between his rib cage, and obviously he reversed it back on me. And so, I mean, those are just moments that we all share.
Yeah.
And when you're doing it for your teammates and guys that you know that are working just as hard as you are, it's worth it. It's worth it.
All right, we'll get one there in a second. Let's go to JP first for another question.
Okay. James. James, where are you from?
From Stirling in Scotland.
So way up north then. Cowboys fan, obviously. What's your question?
Yeah, if Dez Bryant goes to the Hall of Fame, would Michael be happy to present him?
If Dez Bryant goes to the Hall of Fame, would you like to be his presenter?
Oh, yes. My son? You're talking about my son. Yes, absolutely. I want to present my son. Listen, I always say that I measure men on distance travel. Don't tell me where you are. Tell me where you started from, and let me see where you are, and I will measure you accordingly. And when we talk about distance travel, Dez has come a long way. A long way. And I'm not just talking about on the football field. I'm talking about from where he was born and the situation he was born in to fight out of all of that to get to where he is and to continue to fight the way how hard he fights with that intensity. That is my son. And yes, he is flawed, but so am I. And I love him.
Michael, on Dez Bryant, I cover the NFL from 4,000 miles from the United States. I had a different perception of Dez Bryant until I sat down at training camp this year and met him. And I met him and I said, what a great guy. What a guy who's driven to win. A complete different perception than you had from the outside when you get to sit and meet with him.
And I always caution people on that. You know, we have a lot of young men coming in this league that comes from various backgrounds. And we have to be smart enough to discern as they come in the league between the weak and the wicked. The weak, because of their upbringing, we just got to undergird them, give them the right tools, and they can succeed. Like Dez, Brian, and some other guys. The wicked, we got to get rid of them.
That's right.
And that's the truth. And Dez might have been a little weak in some areas because of where he came from. But, man, he's doing great now. He's gotten the things he needed, and he's doing well, and I love it.
Most of the time, guys like Dez, myself, and Michael, I like to look at us and say we all have had surrogate mothers and fathers in our lives.
Right.
And those folks have been very inspirational to us and inspiring to us at some point along this journey. And so, like Michael talked about distance travel. Well, when you get to the end and you reflect over what you've been able to accomplish, you truly can understand and respect the distance travel and the people who've helped shape you into the person that you become. We all come out sometimes, we don't always come out as polished as we need to be. But along the way, there's a Michael Irvin, there's a Jimmy Johnson, there's a Dwight Thomas, there's a Troy Aikman, there's somebody that can undergird you and help you understand that the path that you're on right now might be the path that can lead you to destruction or it can take you to elevation. And what we try to do as former players is elevate players to a different level because they're going on a journey that we've already been on.
Right.
And so we understand the ins and outs of it. It's not like I don't care about you being successful in terms of beating my records. Beat all of them.
Right.
But because I know how hard it is to make it happen. So we want to help you get there and work you to the point where you can become the best you that you could possibly be.
All right, let's take another question over this side. Yep, gentleman there.
Hi, guys. Thanks for coming over. But the question I'd like to ask, Troy does the commentary now. Have you guys ever thought about doing it?
I tried it. I like what I'm doing now.
and Troy's great at it, man. Troy is so good. And quarterbacks are great because they see the whole game. They've always studied the whole game. You know, I do studio shows, and I've done games. Emmett does studio shows. He's done games. But Troy is just excellent at it, and who knew he would be so great at it? Because he never really said that much anyway. But I'm glad he saved up all his words, and he's using them now. But he's great at it.
He probably couldn't get a word in if he tried, right?
I mean, he talks more today than he ever talked when we was playing football. I mean, he called the plays and that was it.
That's all you heard, right?
Walk the sideline.
Where's JP?
I'm looking for you.
You got a question, JP?
Straight away. Hey, Emmett's pointing at me. Right here.
Go on then, go for it.
Mark is with me. He's a DeMarco Murray fan, apparently. What's your question?
First of all, guys, thanks for coming to England at last and bringing the Cowboys here. We've waited a long time. Thanks for all the memories as well. Now,
wait a minute, I got to interrupt. What about the Jaguars, too? Come on.
Steady, JP. Be honest now, guys. Who was the favorite team to score against, and more importantly, why?
I love beating on the Washington Redskins. I love beating on the Washington Redskins. I mean, man, if I could come back and play in one game, it would be that game against the Washington Redskins. That would be it.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I see the skins guy back there. Yeah,
it's me too, man.
I love being on that burgundy right there, boy. I ain't lying.
And obviously they like playing us. I mean, every year it seems like if the Redskins were up, and they were up in 89
they were up,
and it's the only team we beat. You know, it just seems like. It's just such a great game. And even a couple weeks ago, Cowboys are up, and the Redskins came in and beat them. It's just such a great rivalry. My rookie year against the Washington Redskins, man, I caught 3 touchdowns, 149 yards. I'll never forget it. I tell everybody, I said, my rookie year, I caught 3 touchdowns against Del Green. I omit the part that Del Green left the game the first quarter. I just forget telling that part. I caught those 3 touchdowns. The guy was wearing number 49. I don't even remember his name. But I tell him it happened on Del Green.
You know what they say, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, right? Let's go for the over there and then down here.
Who would you say is the toughest player on the current Dallas team?
Probably Dez Bryant. I'll probably say Dez Bryant.
You know, and Dez is tough. I'll give you somebody on defense. We go offense and defense, and I love because of the redemption story and the story of fighting back again. Rolando McClain, and what he's done.
You know,
when Dallas is in the Bible Belt, man. And I told Rolando, I said, hey man, this story could be big. Just stay on the right path, man, and then turn this story around, and it'll change the lives of a whole lot of people.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And just on that, I mean, when you both played, do you know that people look up to you and you can change lives and you can influence people? Did you feel that when you were playing or more so now when you finished?
You know, I think I had great appreciation for it because my mom always told me no matter where you go, you always have a chance to help someone else. And if you rise to the top and on your way up, don't forget that there are people that's not up there with you. And always extend a helping hand. And that's what Mike was talking about when he started talking about Rolando McClain and you started talking about Dez Bryant and so many other professional athletes that come out of these cultures that are not the norm. And so having the opportunity to have a platform or a stage like this to share our journey and our life lessons and in plain view, that's a wonderful thing. Because if we can help another person overcome an obstacle that we've already overcame, then that person don't have to go through that thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't have to go through it, that's a blessing. You must take the lessons from life.
Yeah.
Because there have been many folks that have come before us that have made many mistakes, and we can learn from those mistakes. We don't have to repeat the same stupid mistake over and over and over again.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to the lady in the front row right here then.
Yes.
Oh, it's the gentleman behind her.
I just want to say I've been a fan for a long time, like, ever since I was in kindergarten.
So you're only 15?
Nah, I'm 26 from Austin. I know you signed a lot of autographs in your life, but I was hoping you could sign one more. I got a football right here. I was hoping I could toss it to Michael Irvin.
That's your question? Yes. He still have hands.
Man, I thought you had a proper question.
They're kind of arthritic a little bit, but he still.
You got it.
He won't drop it. There we go.
Wait, go ahead.
You might start something now. JP, you got a question while we signing that?
Yes, sir. They're signing autographs. But Nick is in the United States Air Force Airman, right? Or is, no, it's not the rank. Either way, he's in Italy, and he's here for the game. Big Cowboys fan. What's the question?
This actually is for Emmett. With the last couple years, it's being pass-heavy on the offense. How do you feel about DeMarco and the stats he put up so far?
Yeah, DeMarco Murray.
You know what I absolutely love? Everybody says that the running back position is dying off, but yet when you give somebody an opportunity to run the football like we've given DeMarco Murray this year, we have been committed to the run game more so than I've ever seen in the last 5 years or so. Yeah. And so with that commitment comes this type of productivity. And he's showing the rest of the entire National Football League, and as if the Seattle Seahawks didn't show him last year. When you run the football effectively, you open up the entire playbook. Defense's number one mission is to stop the run.
Yeah.
But when you're able to do that, you give the quarterback, play action comes into play, all these other things come into play that opens up the entire playbook for your entire team, and it makes you a better team because you control the clock, you keep your defense on the bench, and you just wheel your way to victory through a tough defense, and I love it. I'm happy for DeMarco.
I guess both of you would be, I guess in the media we talk, DeMarco's on pace for 400 carries. We almost say it as if it's poor old DeMarco because so many teams now have two running backs, but as Jason Garrett said, he's our workhorse, he's our bell cow, and that's what you were used to. That was the era you came from where there were still franchise backs.
You know, my thing is this. You only have one shot at the apple. And right. That's the way you have to approach it. Because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You could talk about, yes, 400 carries, this, and all those kind of things. But tomorrow is not guaranteed. Your moment and your time is now. You take advantage of it right now. Yeah. And you allow the chips to stack up where they may. Give this man the football until he tell you I'm tired. You keep giving it to him.
And I also think that what you do is, when you start talking about controlling his carries, is take away some of the fuel of the offensive line. The offensive line want to make their mark. And how can they make their mark? Because nobody talks about them and to name their names. But when they get a running back that breaks the 2,000-yard barrier, when they get a running back that becomes the league-leading rusher, all of these things. So when you start saying, I'm going to limit his carries, you start taking away energy from the guys up front. Yeah. So don't do that. Just say, hey, we'll run him until he can't run anymore. We'll let time figure it out later on.
At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. I mean,
it really is.
I remember when Ernie Zampezi called North Turner one day. He said, Ernie said, North, how do I know when to stop giving him the football? And North Turner turned to him and said, he'll tell you when he's tired. And that's the approach. That's the approach. You keep feeding that guy because your whole offense now is developing a different level of energy. You see it on the football field. You see it translating over to the defense because the defense is flying around faster than anything I've seen in the last couple years.
Right?
They're fresh. They're ready to come get you and everything else. So this Cowboy team is on the right path. We just got to keep it going and just keep our guys healthy.
Jeff, two slightly different characters in that Emmett's a little bit quieter than Michael Irvin. But what comes through when you listen to those guys is passion, fond memories. They're still so very close, all of those Cowboys from that team. And they had a fierce, fierce commitment to want to win. And they turned it around from being a really bad team to winning. You know, they won all those Super Bowls.
Yeah, you know, and it's a different time. It's different age and time now. And that's why the rebuilding processes that we talked about, Gus Bradley, that you know what he's going to have to go through, and some of the other teams in the NFL. But they went through the same thing. Jimmy Johnson, that first year, I think they won one football game, and he went through probably 85, 90, maybe 100 players. They were guys in and out of there all the time. But they were not going to settle for anything except getting better.
Yeah.
And they, you know, again, you talk about an unquenchable thirst for victory. Mm. Well, that's what those Cowboys had. And when you know, you had two of the triplets in that interview, and you get the third one together, when you get Troy Aikman together in that bunch, and you listen to them talk, and you hear them, the way they address one another, and you can tell that what they had in Dallas was a real love for one another. Mm. And love's one of those slippery words. But I tell you what, if you talk about the great teams, almost in every case, they have that kind of affection for one another.
This is our last podcast of the year, Jeff. When we come back, we'll be looking back on the wild card round of the playoffs. So we don't know, as we're recording this right now, the complete playoff lineup, but playoffs are great, aren't they, in January? I mean, everyone talks about the January blues, not for NFL fans, because we've had all these weeks of must do this to get in and must do that and complicated scenarios. Then it becomes so painfully simple in the playoffs. Win and you go on.
Yeah, you know what?
Lose and you go home.
And you know, it's been said, you are what your record says you are. Well, that's really true. And your seeding is what your seeding should be.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter anymore. You can be from, you know, the NFC South and have a poor record.
Yep.
And play an 11-win team from another division that has to come to you, but that's the rules. And the bottom line is, when you put your hand in the dirt and that ball's snapped,
yeah,
you got to play, because you have, if you don't string enough good plays together to get one more point than the opposition, next week you're on the couch watching them.
And as coaches, do you really try and build that message that this new season, this is a new season? We are, you know, if you're that NFC South champion, we are as much a part of this playoff picture as Seattle.
Well, I think it comes down to consistent messaging. So, for example, I know Jason Garrett in Dallas. I know him very well. I know what his message is. It's stacking one good day on top of another.
Yep.
Stacking one good play on top of another. And then going on to the next play. But the reality of it is that the players understand, particularly the veteran players that have been in the league a little bit. You know, you talk about the Cowboys. Well, if you're Jason Witten, you know you don't have that many more chances at it. And you want to stand on that podium. You want that confetti to fall. You want to be the champion of the world. Mm. You may not get another chance. So you got to understand the urgency, the sense of urgency that goes with every single preparation day, every rep in practice, every stitch of film, every down, every play, and you just try and stay in the moment, because if you get too focused on the other things, you won't be playing next week.
All right, so that's it for 2014 and the Inside the Huddle podcast. I'm sure there's lots to look forward to in 2015 for all NFL fans in the UK. Three games to come at Wembley Stadium next year. Before that, the Super Bowl, the playoffs, and, of course, what will be a busy off-season in the NFL. We thank you again for downloading this podcast. Jeff, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hooey ho, and we will see you back in the new year.
Hooey what?
Hooey ho. That means like later. All right. See you next time.
See you next time, everyone. Thanks for downloading. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster. Happy New Year, and we'll speak to you in 2015.